Blog Talk Radio.
If you want groceries in your basket, be with Newt. If you want food upon your table, be with Newt. If you want jobs, 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 and prosperity, be with Newt. Be with Newt. Proud of America, be with Newt. If you think we're exceptional, be with Newt. We are a shining city on a hill. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. If you want to win the future, if you want to save America, be with Newt. A president with real solutions, be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. A 21st century contract now with Newt. A contract with the with Newt. Newt Gingrich is the man with the plan. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. He'll lead us the right way in the USA. Time to switch, vote for Newt Gingrich. America great again. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt.
And hello, folks. Thank you for coming again to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And actually, the Patriot Journalist Network was founded around the time of 2012 on the basis of a group of us Newt Gingrich supporters getting together and supporting Newt Gingrich and his campaign. And then it's became the group that it is today. But that's where the Patriot Journalist Network has its roots, is in supporting a Newt Gingrich. And tonight that is what the show is about. Newt Gingrich 2016, why America needs him for our president now as we did in 2012, maybe even more so. Now, I know a lot of folks might be thinking, why in 2014, when we have a general election coming up for Senate and the House, that we bring up 2016. Well, a number of things. One is that, of course, there's plenty of folks out there, and there will be still even more conversation as the 2014 election starts to gear up, ending in November. So there will be plenty of folks talking about that. But I think what's very important and what actually gave to some of the success of Mitt Romney's campaign is that they started early. Mitt Romney pretty much ran for president for 5 years when he won. Of course, there's other circumstances that we've discussed well here on the show about that. But building the organization that he had, and also building the inevitability, of course, with the help of the media, of his dominance, and that he would definitely gain the nomination, which of course we know he did, and then subsequently lost, as we at least here on the show knew that he would. But so we have to build that organization now. We have to have shows like this so that we know that we still support Newt. And I find something's been troubling is I've been getting some emails asking about who would you support in 2016 from articles from Newsmax. So if anyone out there is a Newsmax subscriber, perhaps write a letter to them asking to put Newt Gingrich on those questionnaires on who they would vote for. At least put a place at other where we can put Newt in, because, of course, I believe if Newton knows that there are still so many folks out there supporting him, then, of course, one way we could support him is to come on and speak on shows like this, but as well as go to his website and help him pay off his debt, and we'll be bringing up more about that and be doing some money bonds for that in the hopefully not too distant future. So we want to definitely talk about that. So tonight we will have a discussion about Newt Gingrich. We will also be having some audio about him and what I plan on going, depending on the show and how things go, is I've recently been LinkedIn with Newt, and so we'll see if that gives me any means of contact to sending him these links directly, or at least someone who handles those such things with him, and if we can start sending him the message that we want to draft you like Washington was drafted for you to run again in 2016. And it's not uncommon, as you know, folks, for candidates to run in back-to-back presidential elections. So it's definitely not unheard of for that to happen. Of course, that's why you're also hearing, should Mitt run again? I don't think he should. I think it'd be an abysmal failure. Said, I do want to bring on another one of our panelists from Florida, our great grassroots activist, and also was a Newt supporter in 2012, and that is our very dear friend, Cindy Todd. Cindy, thank you for calling into the show. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm fine, and hi out there to all three of us. when you talk about Newt these days, people just, I don't know, they just want to close up and they don't want to say anything about him, or they want to criticize him. And I just think of what a tragedy it is that people don't understand him, they don't forgive him for his mistakes. And they don't really understand what he did that makes him so valuable to us. They don't understand what he knows that makes him so valuable to us. And they don't understand what it is about politics that makes him so valuable to us. But anyway, like I said in chat, sitting here dreaming about how it could have been one day. If it had been, if we'd have had him instead of the Mitwit.
Right. I really think he could have beaten Obama, you know, in the primary.
No,
I'm not in the primary, in the general election.
There's no doubt about it. Mitt Romney's the only one that couldn't beat Obama.
Exactly.
He was the only.
Exactly. He
I
was
think
the
any
absolute
of them
worst candidate.
Maybe Bachman. I'm thinking maybe Michelle Bachman might not have been able to beat him. But,
yeah, I don't think she could have. I think maybe Ron Paul perhaps, but I don't think.
I think Ron could have. I think Ron Paul could have. I think that what's his face? Now I've forgotten all their names.
Herman Cain might have even been able to. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely think Herman Cain would have beat him, and I think. Who was the supposedly conservative one that we found out was married to some woman that used to be living with an abortionist or something? Who was that?
I guess he was pretty inconsequential if we can't remember his name.
No, that has nothing to do with it. He was very consequential. It's just that I have a 58-year-old brain now. Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember who you talked about either. But speaking about, you know, how things could have been, and I know, you know, we don't want to look back. We definitely want to look further. But just to give people a taste of why he should have been supported in 2012, and why we should get support again, especially if we have Hillary Clinton up Rick
which,
you know, he defeated her back. I'm sorry?
It was Rick Santorum.
Oh, Rick Santorum. He was consequential, okay. and perhaps I think he was implanted into the campaign by the establishment, especially if you look at his record. I mean, he talked conservative, but I don't know how conservative he actually was. I mean, he also said he was against the Tea Party. We've had audio clips that we played with him saying he's against the Tea Party.
He had a perfect union record, if you like the union.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, and he definitely supported some liberals as well. But I have an audio clip here that this is how things could have been, of course, since we're wishing for that. If we would have had him for 2012 for our nominee, and this is what in the debate could have sounded like.
Gingrich.
Tonight, Newt Gingrich, again, I think did the best.
The guy that I'm agreeing with most up on stage is probably the guy to my left, so I would say that Newt Gingrich would be the guy.
Actually, Newt has been one of the best of the other candidates.
Newt Gingrich showed last night why many conservatives believe he is the best person to take on Obama.
Anybody who's covered Newt Gingrich over the years knows better than to underestimate him.
When Newt Gingrich goes after the mainstream media or one of their reporters, he's going after Barack Obama, and that's what the Republican primary voters want.
It actually got a standing ovation, which is fairly unusual in a debate like this.
These debates are part of the reason why Newt Gingrich just won South Carolina.
Well, maybe we should go along with what Gingrich wants and have debates without moderators.
Why Newt Gingrich?
I just think he's got the best economic plan of any of the candidates.
Tea Party Nation founder Judson Phillips says Newt is the most electable, and he's also impressed with Gingrich's debate performances.
Reagan conservative, grassroots, which is Newt Gingrich.
Just take a look at the extraordinary men and women who make up the 104th Congress, and of course its distinguished speaker, Newt Gingrich. Barry Goldwater handed the torch to Ronnie. And in turn, Ronnie turned that torch over to Newt.
The distinction between Speaker Gingrich and President Obama will be so distinct that I think that gives him the best chance in order to be able to get elected president.
Newt Gingrich comes out as the big winner tonight.
And it's rare that the group almost unanimously picks one winner. Tell me, who won this debate?
Gingrich.
Show the audience, how many of you were backing Gingrich 10 days ago? Raise your hands. And how many of you thought that he won today?
Newt Gingrich would, he would clobber Barack Obama in any debate, any forum that had to do with substance when it comes to policy and solutions for the challenges that America faces. Newt Gingrich would clobber Barack Obama.
And what I want to do is to make sure that the plumber, the nurse, the firefighter, the teacher, the young entrepreneur who doesn't yet have money, I want to give them a tax break now. And that requires us to make some important choices. Last point I'll make about small businesses, not only do 98% of small businesses make less than $250,000, but I also want to give them additional tax breaks because they are the drivers of the economy. They produce the most jobs.
The fact is that more people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president in American history. Now, I know among the politically correct you're not supposed to use facts that are uncomfortable. Second, you were the one who earlier raised a key point. The area that ought to be I-73 was called by Barack Obama a corridor of shame because of unemployment. Has it improved in 3 years? No. They haven't built the road. They haven't helped the people. They haven't done anything.
Finish your talk, Mr. Speaker.
One last thing.
Yes, sir.
So here's my point. I believe every American of every background has been endowed by their creator with the right to pursue happiness, and if that makes liberals unhappy, I'm going to continue to find ways to help poor people learn how to get a job, learn how to get a better job, and learn someday to own the job.
okay, with all the applause. But that's what it could have been. I mean, there are so many mistakes that Romney made throughout the debates that, you know, he didn't have a chance. But that's what it could have been. And, of course, if I was going to say earlier, if Hillary gets in, he beat her before back when Clinton were in office. And I mean Clinton, what I mean by Hillary, and her husband, of course, Bill. But, you know, if she comes up and doesn't end up being the nominee, or whoever the Democrats, you know, end up electing, which I do think it would be her. I can't think of anyone else that they would do.
You know,
but I think Gingrich would be the one to beat her. What do you think, Cindy?
Oh, absolutely. He would go up against any Democrat that he went up against. He's going to beat him. And any Republican that he goes up against in an honest fashion, if they're honest and if they're fair, if they fight fair, he's going to win any battle against any Republican. The problem is, as you could hear in those debates, the people got behind Newt. I mean, it gives you goosebumps to hear how the audience, I mean, you don't hear that in a debate. When have you ever heard that in a presidential debate? The
right.
Democrats will start going crazy when Obama speaks, when he says nothing. When he says nothing. You can tell it's an act. You can tell that he hasn't said anything worth cheering over. They're just cheering because he's him, because he's their boy, you know? And I don't understand how people could hear that. 1 minute they're listening to that and hearing the intelligence of Newt and the ideas of Newt and how well he debates and how, like Sarah said, he would put Obama to shame if he ever went up against him in a debate. And how can people see all that, watch those debates, look at his plans, know who he is and what he's done already, and then they believe the crap that came out in Florida when Mitt Romney got so scared that he imploded and he just said, we, you know, they had to do something. And so they brought out every piece of trash they could, even the lies. And too many people believed the lies. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people just don't understand what they gave up. They don't understand. Even today, some of the people that I messaged to come in and listen to the show, they hate it. And it's because of the rumors and the you know, the attack brought on such negativity onto him, and people allowed that. And they just, it's like they're totally blind. They didn't see what Mitt Romney and the Democrats have done together to stop
mm-hmm.
him. They saw he was a snowplow. He was coming down, and there was nobody going to stop him. He was a steamroller, and there was just no contest between those people on the stage. Everybody knew it, and they knew they had to do something to stop it. And what they did was, instead of elevating Mitt in some quasi-surge to the front, they decided to let Mitt hang back, push Rick Santorum up, and take votes away from him. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, it was a mess, and I'll never forget what they did in Tampa. It was the hardest thing to watch that I think I've ever had to watch in as long as I've lived and voted and watched politics happen. It's the most
yep.
disgusting display of corruption in our voting and corruption in our campaigning. I've never seen anything like it. I've just never seen anything.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and frankly, it's the reason I left the Republican Party. I've had, you know, folks, you know, ask me to come back, and you know, I've had other folks who've asked me to be a, you know, take up some positions in the party. I won't say exactly what, because they're approaching me again about it. But I've not decided where I'm going to go yet, because it's really going to take a lot for me to, you know, to go back to the party. But the show's, how I feel about that, but, you know, talk about Newt and what, you know, what he's into now and why he should be, you know, we want to, you know, kind of draft him again to come in. And so I do got some more audio clips that I'll play. And first is, of course, you know, we still have the, you know, war on terror supposedly going on, or perhaps some say that it's over. But this is a recent audio clip that I've got about Newton. It's called The Truth About Radical Islam.
The United States has already dropped some food and water to tens of thousands of Iraqis trapped at the top of a mountain who had to flee the militants. So can the United States stop ISIS before the militants completely overrun Iraq? And most importantly, from this perspective, what should the U.S. role be here? Joining us to discuss, CNN's Crossfire host, Newt Gingrich. So, Newt, I really am interested in getting your take on not only the president's statement, but also the action the president decided to take last night.
Well, let's start with his statement, which is, frankly, a little confusing.
Why?
If he doesn't want to risk American lives, he can pull them out of Erbil. I mean, there's no obligation to sit in Erbil. So he was trying to find a hometown, gosh, I have to do this. All of us patriots have to rally together. We're not going to risk American lives. The tragedy of where we are, and this is not about President Obama. This is about President Bush. It's about President Clinton. It's about where the country's been now about radical Islamism, probably since 1979 when the Iranians seized the American embassy. Nobody wants to tell the truth. The truth is, this is a radical Islamist group. They say openly, if you don't convert, we'll kill you. It turns out they actually mean it. There's no complexity. They're exactly like Hamas. Hamas says openly, we're going to kill every Jew. That's a direct quote from 2 weeks ago. We will kill every Jew. The difference is that ISIS is gaining power, and they're doing exactly what they said they would do. And I think this is, if you go from Boko Haram in Nigeria all the way across the region, what you see is a radical Islamist force. Nobody in the American State Department, nobody in the White House, not just Obama, but for three or four administrations, we have not had the courage to confront how bad this is. And it's getting worse. By the way, yesterday there were ISIS forces in Lebanon occupying a town in the middle of a fight with the Lebanese army in northern Lebanon. They're in Syria. They are recruiting people in Europe and the United States. They see themselves as a worldwide fight. And so the president says, we're going to stop them from getting to Erbil. Well, what does that accomplish?
Well, what is your prescription? Do you want to see combat troops on the ground? What are you saying?
No. I think that we should be arming and training the Kurds, who are very reliable. We should be arming the traditional tribes with whom we had very good relations back when we were in Iraq. We should be providing air power in a massive way. We should be hunting down ISIS anywhere it exists, whether it's in northern Syria, it's in Lebanon, or it's in Iraq. But our goal shouldn't be to stop ISIS, or our goal should be to destroy ISIS. This is a radical, anti-human organization.
Do you not think, Newt, that you can accomplish that with, if you went really big on airstrikes, that you can accomplish that, taking them out?
I think if you train and equip Kurds and you train and equip traditional Sunni tribes and you ally yourself with everybody who wants to defeat ISIS, you will, in fact, defeat ISIS. But the goal should be clear, just as it should be in Gaza. The goal in Gaza should be the defeat of Hamas, because Hamas means what it says. It wants to kill every Jew. ISIS means what it says. Well, you can't coexist with a neighbor whose stated public goal is to wipe your family out.
Well, we're talking about how to accomplish,
right?
What to do to accomplish that goal on the ground. But then you also have a problem here at home. You've got lawmakers last night, by and large, came out supporting the president's move, some saying it is not enough, as I'm hearing from you. But you also have an American public. We've talked about this before, Newt. They are war-weary. They have no appetite to be going back in, to be throwing everything at it, to take on, to start, they're not saying they're going to start nation-building again, but they don't want to go back in. What do you say to the American public?
I don't blame them. We've just had 12 years of war that accomplished almost nothing. You're seeing that in Iraq right now. You're seeing it with Hamas right now. Until we have a national strategy and we have an open, honest conversation, the president couldn't even honestly describe ISIS last night because it goes against his ideology. So
what do you mean? How was he misdescribing it last night?
ISIS is a radical Islamist organization dedicated to wiping out everybody who's not prepared to convert to Islam. has a very clear religious background, just as Hamas does, just as Boko Haram does. There is a war against Christians across the region, and the fact is that we have got to be prepared to be honest about this. We should be the ally of every rational, moderate Muslim, but we should understand with people like ISIS, this is going to end up sooner or later being war to the death, and what the American people deserve is a coherent strategy that gets us to a decisive victory, and the minimum use of American troops and the maximum use of other kinds of American assets.
One thing that, of course, comes up is the question of, is this mission creep, or looking at it from the other side, is this not enough? I want, in answering those questions and kind of exploring that, you also, when you commit to something like this, you need to be prepared to answer the question, then what? Has the president answered
yes.
that?
No, and look, there's a passion for some reason, particularly on the left, with this idea of targeted strikes. I remember doing this at one point in the Balkans when I was speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't understand what the term targeted strikes means. If ISIS is as evil as I'm describing, and I think it is, as the Pope has described in calling for humanitarian intervention, as everybody seems to describe in looking at what it's doing, then we should be trying to defeat it everywhere, not saying, as the president said last night, boy, if you send a truck towards Erbil, we might kill it. Well, what about the truck that's sitting, you know, 2 miles away with its engine idling, waiting for us to not pay attention? I think either this is serious and we should figure out how to win, or this is not serious and we should figure out how to get out. And as I pointed out, he could pull the troops out of Erbil, and he just eliminated one of his two excuses. There's no reason we have to be there unless it's part of a strategic purpose.
How does the political turmoil that's also happening on the ground in Iraq, how does that play into this? Because there is a possibility we're hearing that, you know, they could get a new prime minister in the coming days. Does that change anything in your opinion on how the U.S. approaches this?
Yeah, I think Maliki has been a disaster just as Karzai has been a disaster in Afghanistan. And I think that's the reality sometimes of going into countries like this, that you end up with a leader who is either very corrupt, very dishonest, trying to make sure his faction wins at the cost of everybody else. We don't have a very good doctrine, frankly, at the State Department for figuring out how you cope with people like that. Maliki's been a major problem for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll be gone, but that won't solve the problem. You now have in ISIS a cancer that is spreading in the region and a cancer that is recruiting in Europe and the United States.
But do you agree with the president's statement, though? And he said this to me when we sat down early on in this latest crisis when we talked about this, and he said it again last night. There is no American military solution to the larger crisis in Iraq. Do you agree with him on that?
No, and the reason I don't agree with him is that his idea that the political solution is a fantasy. That's my point. How are you going to have a political solution with Hamas, who wants to kill every Jew? How are you going to have a political solution with ISIS, which wants to kill everybody who refuses to become Muslim? Ultimately, these are forces just like Nazi Germany.
But he's saying
you
it's
end
up to
defeating.
Iraq. They need to be the ones to deal with this ultimately.
Look, ISIS is now in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. It is recruiting in Europe and the United States. That's my whole point. You've got to see this as a worldwide fight, not a locality-by-locality neighborhood brawl.
Dude, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming
good
on.
Good to see you.
Talk
Thank
to you,
you
soon. All right.
So I do see some folks who have called in, whether to listen to the show. If you'd like to chime in and be a part of the show tonight, just push the 1 on your number dial. And also, if you'd like to listen in, just give us a call at 347-945-7428. But as I said, just push the 1 on your number dial if you'd like to chime in. So that's something that's recent in the news. So what do you think, Cindy?
Well, he's just brilliant. He's got it pegged. He's the only one out there that has it pegged. And I haven't heard anybody else on television say what he's saying. I'm so grateful that Newt still has a voice out there, even if it is on the other station. But, it doesn't really matter these days.
But the way Fox News treated him during the campaign, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just glad to see he's out there still having a national voice, because there has to be somebody out there who's willing to tell the truth. And as far as I can tell, Newt is the only one of someone his caliber that will come ahead and just lay it on the line. He doesn't care about political correctness. That's what I've always liked about Newt. He could care less about political correctness. he's not one of them, and that's the reason he was castigated during the election.
Right.
They don't want him around.
He was truly the grassroots candidate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you can call him a Tea Party candidate or whatever you want to call him, but he's the grassroots. He's the guy that talks for you and I. He's the one. He's the only one that we can count on to say. I mean, I've listened to, you know, there's been a lot of speeches on the Senate floor and a lot of speeches on the House floor, and we got some really good guys out there: Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, what's his name? Well, I don't know. You know them all. There's a handful in each house, in each side of the House, each side of the Congress. And look, you know, they're strong. They come out real strong on economy and stuff like that. But not one of them will tell the truth or really come down on these Muslims that they just don't understand. Here's what I'm thinking. Go back to 1400s, mid to late 1400s, and look at how Spain and Portugal and all those people were fighting so hard to get the Moors out, Islam, okay, and they saw it for what it was. They knew the enemy they were dealing with had to be crushed. You don't go play around with an enemy that says anybody that doesn't convert to Islam is going to be killed, okay? You don't play around with somebody like that. And it's not like they sat around saying all this stuff and then didn't do anything to prove it. The proof is every day, 100 missiles into Israel, every day. They prove it every day. So what is so hard about telling the truth? What is so hard about figuring out their agenda? There's nothing hard about it. And yet, for some reason, the only thing I can think of, Robert, is that the elitist, statist idiots at the top are using the chaos that the Muslims are perpetrating in order to bring this nation to a place where it has us, the regular citizens, the average citizens, under control. I'm so worried that the plan is to bring such chaos here through terrorism that it will be allowed. You see the way they've opened up the borders. Everybody's coming in now. I've heard several people now say there are suitcase bombs here in America now, right now, in the hands of the bad guys. Okay, and I'm like, okay, why are they allowing that in here? Okay, are we waiting until there's such a disaster that the people of the United States will allow the government to go into martial law, never to come out of it again, never to have another presidential election, never to have our Bill of Rights restored to us ever again? And it's all because, and then as soon as they have control of us, then they let loose their nukes over there in Iran, Iraq, wherever they have to. Then they unleash the disaster, and they put those guys in their place. Because I don't see them. I know if I can figure it out, and you can figure it out, Robert, if we know what Islam is doing, they know it too, and they're willing to allow it to come in here to a certain point. But I guarantee you, they don't want to live under Islam. They don't want to live under Sharia law. Can you see Nancy Pelosi bowing towards Mecca? That ain't gonna happen. So, you know, it's do or die with them. And so, you know, that those people who don't want to have anything to do with Christ They don't want to have anything to do with morality. They want amoral society with them at the top in control, controlling all the money, making them rich and all the rest of us poor. Okay, in order to do that, you've got to destroy the Muslims. Well, they're going to wait until we're destroyed first. Then they'll go after the Muslims, because they're not going to be under Muslims. If the Muslims think that the United States is going to just roll, if they think that those elite people at the top are going to just roll over and let them take over when they have a nuke in their hand, nah, it won't happen. Now, Nancy Pelosi's not going to bow towards Mecca. Harry Reid's not going to bow towards Mecca. No, they're communists. No God for communists. What do you think?
Well, no, I agree with you. No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, well, I wouldn't say 100, maybe 99%. But, you know, I don't think that, much like Dan on the show, as he said, that I don't think that, you know, there's going to be any kind of martial law, or at least try to control us completely just for the fact that in order for them to do that, guns, and I think it's as long as the Second Amendment stays, then we won't have to. Now, I know they've done martial law in other, you know, places, and we've seen and we talked about it on the show, people that, you know, going into, like during Katrina, things of that nature, trying to take normal citizens' weapons away. And if it was a nationwide, maybe they would try to do that. But I think that if that was to happen, there would be such an uprising in the country against them that I don't think that would happen.
Well, you know, that's what Dan's been saying, that, you know, they wouldn't get away with it. There would be an uprising. And so we're going to have another revolution is what's going to happen. Because the people, you know, the elite are depending on us. They think that they have sufficiently dumbed us down intellectually, desensitized us to violence so that we won't care that our neighbor's getting blown away. And they think that they have powder puffed us now to where men aren't men anymore and women aren't women anymore. And they think they've accomplished all that. But I think they're going to find out that freedom comes before all the crap that we want, all the materialism, all the fluff, you know, whatever it is, all the diversion from television, movies, whatever. We're diverted. But all of that gonna disappear in importance when it comes to the time and the place where, look what I just allowed to happen. I don't have the Bill of Rights anymore. What are they gonna do to me? They're going to make me a slave. And as soon as people understand that that's what's going on and that's the plan for them, they're going to wake up and see Newt. Newt was definitely onto him. You know, he's a member of the CFR. And so people thought, well, that's because he is one of them. I say it's because he infiltrated them. That's what I say.
He has to know what, he had to be in there to know what was going on.
Exactly. And what did he do with that information? He warned us about it, and he showed us the way out. And then Mitt Romney was able to bamboozle people into thinking the exact opposite. And, you know, that's funny because I don't know if you remember this from your days as a Catholic, but that's one of the things that the Antichrist is going to do. He's going to fool even Christians and people who think they're Christians, people who think they believe in God, he's going to fool them into thinking that he's the one that's God. You know, he's Jesus come again, you know. Anyway, hey, I was hoping Kimmy would call in and tell us what Rush said, because I didn't get to hear that. If you can call in, Kimmy,
that'd be great. I've seen it in the chat. She'd call in. What's the number? 347. Keep pushing that button. Hold on a second. 347-945-7428. And just push the 1 on your number dial if you'd like to chime in. Yeah, I'd like to hear what Rush said as well. Because Rush, I used to be an avid Rush listener too. But what Rush did on the day of the Florida primary really turned me off to him. And what it happened is he lied during the primary. We mentioned earlier about we talked earlier about Rick Santorum and how he might have been kind of a plant. At least I think he was a plant by the establishment in order to take the conservative vote away from Newt Gingrich. And I think Rush kind of contributed to that in the Florida primary, because this is what Rush said, which was a lie, on the day of the Florida primary. Well, I mean, right before show end, and no one could call him to contest it.
By the way, folks, just I have to remind you again that Gingrich debated John Kerry on global warming one point, and they agreed on practically every point. Nobody is innocent. Everybody is guilty of some transgression at somewhere against conservatism, except Santorum. See you tomorrow.
See, and the only two people that he mentioned in that list, last little 27-second clip, was two people. Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich. Yeah, he put the little cameo and where he said no one. But the two names that he put out there were Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich on the day of the Florida primary. On the day of the Florida primary. So,
And now are you going to tell me that Rush didn't know Rick Santorum's union record, that he was a union man all the way, straight up and down? Do you mean to tell me he didn't know that? He sure did.
Oh, he knew it.
And yet he's calling he's saying Rick Santorum is the only one who's clean? Everyone's
right.
Made a mistake except him. That's unbelievable. To me, I lost so much respect for Rush that day because two things happened. Either one of two things happened. He either lied straight up right to our faces, or he did not do his homework, and he had no idea what Rick Santorum's voting record was. That really ticked me off right there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think, Rush, as long as he's been in the business, he knew. I really think he knew. And, one thing that Rush is, and he says that he's not, is a conservative first and a Republican second. I think he's a Republican first, and I'm not saying he's not a conservative, but I think he's Republican first, conservative second. And the powers that be and the Republican Party, pretty much talk with him in these big parties and dinners that I'm positive that they go to and speak with together. Have some conversation on it.
Say that again. I didn't really understand what you were saying there. I'm on a cell phone, and even though
I said I'm positive that the dinners and the conversations that Rush Limbaugh had with the powers that be of the Republican Party, I'm sure they had conversations about where they wanted the election to go. And while some just would say, oh, well, Rush is just an entertainer, we all know the influence that Rush has, and especially you would think in Florida, because where does Rush Limbaugh live? In Florida,
Yeah.
So he definitely has a lot of influence. And if he could, make those statements, especially he said at the end of the show when no one could call him in and contest it.
Well, he was actually not – he was just the nail in the coffin. He was the nail in the coffin. They had begun their barrage on Newt right after Atlanta – or right after Georgia. They were scared to death. And so they began in earnest to trash him in any way possible that they could. And by the time it got to the day before – the election, and Newt made his comment, That was like the nail in the coffin. That's where the lid got closed, the nail went in, and he wasn't coming out anymore. And they made sure the deal was sealed after that. So is Lugnut
going to
call in?
Go ahead. I see some callers. I do see one that's I'm going to do some call screening here in a minute, but I do have another audio clip to play, and we were talking about earlier about his understanding with Gaza and bringing up a little about Ukraine, things of things going on. And that, so I'll go ahead and play this audio while I do some call screening. So this is another recent audio from news.
Hello. I read your tweet in the morning, and today in Tel Aviv there are no flights. And I want to have a, what's your point of view, what's going on in the world? Russia, Syria, the disaster in Iraq, what's going on in Israel? What happened during the last 3-4 years? What happened with this administration? And what happened, what's your point for the future? What's going on here? The world has become crazy,
this is a question.
Or something is failing very bad here?
I feel like Bill Buckley, when he ran for mayor of New York, and a reporter said, in 90 seconds, can you tell us how you'll fix the city? But I think the question's serious and important. So let me just start with the specific you raised, which was where I totally approve of Mayor Bloomberg, who also tweeted this morning because he's on an LL flight. I think that it was an act of cowardice by the United States government. I think there was zero reason to stop our flights into Ben-Gurion. And I think that it is an extraordinary victory for Hamas. And I think we need to understand the Obama administration has handed Hamas an enormous victory psychologically. And I am personally deeply offended by the elite view that the side that fires 2,000 rockets is the moral equivalent of the side which is trying not to kill civilians. And I think the combination of Kerry and the Secretary General of the United Nations is a pro-Hamas mission. As I understand it, Kerry right now is trying to pressure the Israelis into accepting a more pro-Hamas ceasefire than the Egyptians offered, which is exactly the wrong direction. If the United States had a neighbor whose stated public policy was the destruction of the United States, and if that neighbor fired 2,000 missiles in the United States, we would annihilate them. I mean, literally, again, I'm a historian. This is where we got to Hamburg and Dresden and Tokyo. Because our attitude was, you want to know what total war is? And instead we have this absurd game where Hamas dances out, kills a few people, dances back, hides deliberately behind civilians, and the Israelis are then blamed for killing the civilians that Hamas is hiding behind. Now, this is not tolerable. And it fits into the larger question. When you're in a period, and this frankly goes back to the Bush administration, this is not just Obama. George W. Bush's speech immediately after 9/11 was right. There's a triangle of evil, and you're either with us or you're against us. His speech, his second inaugural, was extraordinarily courageous. We stand for freedom. Nobody in the Bush administration really understood what that meant. Because the truth is, I used to tell audiences regularly, I can guarantee you democracy in Iraq, and we won't be there a day longer than we've been in Korea. But don't think you're going to go into a country fundamentally alien to Western values, fundamentally inexperienced in the rule of law, fundamentally torn apart by a three-way ethnic civil war, and you're going to dance through it for a couple of years, get out, and have it change profoundly. It's not going to happen. It's not how history unfolds. We got democracy in Germany and Japan because they had been decisively defeated, and we didn't give them any choices. And instead, we're going into places, you know, where the dominant leader of the Shia would not meet with non-Muslims. Now, that tells you something about how big the gap is. And I was very struck. I believe we are, and I don't have quite the language this yet, but I believe we are moving into an era of evil. And I'm very much reminded of what happened in the 1930s. And Alan First has written a series of brilliant novels about being a normal, regular person leading a normal life in the 30s, watching Mussolini and Hitler and Franco and Stalin and the rise of the dictatorships. You look at ISIS, you look at Putin, you look at what's happening in Syria, you know. And again, we worry about, you know, the president says he's so worried about civilian casualties. Would you like to guess how many Syrians have been killed? Would you like to guess how many Iraqis have been killed? I mean, go down the list. How many Afghans have been killed? How many Ukrainians have been killed? You know, the idea that our selective worry is for the people surrounding Hamas in Gaza strikes me as an example of being totally out of touch with reality. And I think we're in for a long, difficult period. And to have people say, I am really worried about violence in Central America at a time when I worry about violence in Chicago, just again tells me that this selective, myopic worldview of our elites is very dangerous.
There we go. That's the end of that audio clip. And it definitely, you know, it's definitely that he has an understanding of how things are that not very many people have that understanding. And that's one of the reasons why I think the United States, you know, America, we need him as our president, because he just has an understanding that's beyond, you know, beyond just so many other folks. And then what he does is when he talks to folks, he conveys it in a way that people can understand. And he's a historian. I mean, we've heard the phrase, you know, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. But he knows these things. And that's kind of a fundamental, you know, knowledge or principle that, you know, I believe he has that separates him from all, you know, a lot of the other politicians. That's not the only thing, but of course one of the things that separates him from other politicians.
And you know, Robert, he taught at the military academy. He taught military strategy and military history and battle history as part of you know, preparing troops for and preparing officers for coming up with strategies. He knows how these battles were won, and he knows what to do. And let me point out a couple other things that he said. You mentioned that he just knows what's going on. He's on top of it. And he's very transparent. He says exactly what's on his mind. And you'll notice that in the middle there, towards the beginning, he called them elites. He knows that it's the elites at the top that are at the forefront of this fight, and he knows that it's the elites that are you can't understand them. You can't understand where they're coming from unless you go into the conspiracy theory. That's the only way you can explain it. And he also said there's an era of evil coming. Now, Robert, you know how Dan always gets on me because I sound so depressed all the time and so negative all the time. So he's always getting on me. But Cindy, we're gonna fight out of this. We're gonna fight our way out of this, you know. But you know, Newt understands there is an evil era coming, and people have no idea. It's like they've forgotten how to wet their finger and hold it up to the wind. They're so busy watching TV, trying to make ends meet, working two jobs, trying to take care of the family. The kids are out of control. The teenagers are off smoking dope somewhere. And they're so distracted, and they're so, you know, they have no clue. They have no clue. They don't have the time to sit down and pray about it. They won't ask God about it. They won't take the time to read the Bible and find out what the Bible says about these times. because the Bible describes them exactly like they are right now. So, and you know, he says, look how many people have been killed. He started listing off all the places where all these people were killed. And he didn't mention this, but I have heard him mention this before. There have been more Christians killed in the last 50 years than in all the years since Jesus walked the earth. Did you know that, Robert?
Well,
so
no, I did not.
Yeah, and you know the Fox's Book of Martyrs. Well, your Fox's Book of Martyrs these days would have to look like five sets of encyclopedias if you were to tell all the stories of all the people who've lost their lives or got put in jail or were beat, their houses burned, their churches burned, their fathers and mothers put them out, some of them been set on fire. There's just, the list goes on and on. And I get emails and updates from Voice of the Martyrs. It's an organization that was begun by a guy, Richard Wurmbrand, a Romanian pastor, who during the communist days was tortured and imprisoned by the communist government of Russia. And he wrote a book while he was, when it came out, he wrote a book. Well, actually, written it while he, part of it while he was in there. But anyway, he wrote a book instructing Christians how to live during persecution. I have a copy of that book, and it's a very interesting book because we may have to be using some of the strategies in that book very soon. but the Voice of the Martyrs tracks all the people who are being persecuted that it can. It can't get everybody. There's just too many places. There's no way to find all of them and to know all the stories, but they have stories every day, new stories about things going on all over the world, even Mexico. Did you know that there was an area down in South Mexico that was persecuting Christians? The religion down there, the basic religion down there, is a mixture of Catholicism and animism and ancient ancestor worship. And they don't like the Christians. So they've been persecuting Christians down there. So it's all over the world, and nobody's mentioning that either. Now, I don't, who was it? I haven't followed Cruz like I've followed Newt. I haven't followed, what's the guy that's doing the investigation in the IRS? Or Benghazi. Who's the guy that's, Che Gowdy. I haven't really followed him as closely as I have Newt. So if these guys are talking about how many Christians are being killed, I don't know. I haven't heard them say anything. But I have heard Newt talk about it. And so I'm grateful to Newt that he hits every string, he hits every note. He knows exactly what's happening, and he doesn't have a problem saying it.
No, it is not. I was just reading something on the Newt Gingrich in the White House 2016 page on Facebook, and this is Randy Ingram. It says the only one discussing solutions to terrorism is in the world is Speaker Gingrich. The others want to pander to their voting base and appease all the others. We need to get to a point of putting the threats of our demise to an end. I believe that will be the resolve with Newt Gingrich as our president. And I tell you what, I cannot agree more.
Me neither. I think he's absolutely pegged it. Good page. You know, I just wish there was more people. They get. You know what it is? The libertarians don't want someone like Newt because they think he's too establishment. And they're failing to see that he is so anti-establishment, it's ridiculous.
Right, he always has been.
That's the reason the Democrats want him on their show, because he makes them look sick, and they know it. Anyway, it's a kind of
strange.
Well,
you know, and recall, folks, that, you know, when Romney was initially nominated, they, you know, whose face and whose voice were you hearing talking about conservative for a good portion of the beginning of the general election, where people start catching on and thinking, Newt Gingrich is looking more presidential than Mitt Romney is, was Gingrich. I mean, the Republican Party was constantly putting Newt Gingrich out there to talk about conservatism, you know, and as if he was speaking in the voice of, or, you know, speaking for Mitt Romney. Do you recall that? I mean, and then, of course, once people start seeing that, then they had that they shut it down.
Yeah, well, as soon as they realized how his popularity, how it was growing, that's when they got desperate. And they, you know what, I'll bet he had millions of dollars worth of investigators out there looking for every piece of dirt they could. I'll bet you they paid that second wife of his big money for doing her little interview, accusing him of wanting to swing with her or something. That's unbelievable. Oh, wow.
And here's another audio clip I want to play for folks that, you know, you don't hear a lot of people talking about this, you know, a lot of politicians, things of that nature. And, I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't been following, now that the primaries are over, you know, most of the folks who won the primaries, unfortunately, were the establishment's pick. There's only a few of them. And unfortunately, one of the few grassroots folks to come onto the show, won't even mention his name, but I guess the scheduler believes he was too busy to come on. But, hey, that's okay. So I haven't really been following too much of the general 2014 election. I'm already got my sights on 2016, as I said earlier in the show. I feel like there's enough folks concentrating on 2014, and I've been for a while looking, you know, even beyond that. But I wonder how many of the candidates you even hear about, talk this way about America, even though he's running for Senate and the House now. And this is another audio clip that I've got called Newt Gingrich, America is a Magical.
America is magic. It's why
never mind
cynics, academics, and Europeans and others never quite understand this. And we're magic because we really do believe that we can be a city upon a hill. We really do believe that we have been endowed by our Creator. And that isn't an act of arrogance. It's an act of humility. Because it means we have a responsibility. We are people who have been placed on this planet with the opportunity to extend freedom all the way to every human being. We care about people so much that if there's a tsunami in Indonesia, we're there. If there's an earthquake in Turkey, we're there. If there's a hurricane in Honduras, we're there. Part of us has a tear every time a child is lost anyway. That's why if you watch our news, we pay such intense attention when children are lost. Because every single child is a child of mine. We've gotten off on the beach here. And we've done this before, honestly. And we're in a little bit of a mess. And we've had a weak period of political leadership. And we have bureaucracies that think they're Europeans and that we're only subjects and they can order us around. And we have judges who are alienated and think that they actually represent some international worldview superior to the Constitution. And we have a news media that reflects the academic world and an academic world that reflects a fantasy of the left. And so all those things come together. And we have some problems. We are the wealthiest, most extraordinary society in the history of the human race. At this very moment, we are the largest economy by a large scale. We are capable of pulling away from China as decisively as in the 1990s we pulled away from Japan. We have the most powerful military in the history of the world. But we have to come back to grips with a decision about who we are. And what I would say to every young person who's here tonight is, you're at the edge of a revolution in scientific knowledge that is going to liberate you in the next half century, fully as much as any generation of Americans. I'll close with a person I admire a great deal that Chris and I did a movie about, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was born when he had horse cavalry. When we went out and filmed the movie, and we were at the ranch, I saw it, and the ranch was very small, 1950s style building. I saw this picture on the wall that I'd never seen before. It was Ronald Reagan in the 1930s in a U.S. cavalry uniform. Not from a movie, but from an Army Reserve unit. Reagan was in one of the last horse cavalry units in the U.S. Army as a reserve officer. He'd grown up. He was born before motion pictures had sound. He went to Hollywood when Technicolor was brand new. He evolved into television, which had not existed. And he spoke to the nation about the explosion of a space shuttle and the death of a teacher in space. All in one lifetime. And so he believed that you ain't seen nothing yet. And I would say to every young person here tonight, we will be back. We will rebuild the country we love. And we will say to the planet, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Okay, I didn't need to play that music. But there is Newt Gingrich, completed to be our President of the United States 2016. You know, I had a friend of ours, the founder of the Patriot Journalist Network, and that's Mark Prasik. I remember shortly after we lost the nomination for the GOP, for the president, for Gingrich, is that he goes, he felt, and I agree with this wholeheartedly, is he said, I feel like this country just lost a national treasure. Now, of course, we still have Newt Gingrich, thankfully, out there, as you put it earlier, Cindy. He's still out there. But I think we lost a national treasure and the opportunity to have Newt Gingrich, who I think would have been the greatest president, or would be the greatest president since Ronald Reagan, to have been elected, and maybe even in some ways surpassing Reagan. I mean, Reagan was great, but, he wasn't perfect. And I'm not saying Gingrich is perfect, but I think Trudeau, is he learned from some of the things that perhaps weren't so conservative that Reagan did. But he was definitely the closest to it. And then for how many decades, how many presidential elections have we said we needed, we need another Ronald Reagan and the cleanup after what Carter did, and also, other things. And we had the opportunity right there. So that national treasure that America could have had, but we still could have it. Again, now Harriet brought up, she's in the chat, and she brought up a great point. And she said, and this was true, unfortunately, Newt did have some funding. He had a problem getting funding adequate during the campaign. And, of course, as you pointed out, Cindy, about the elites. But that's definitely, one thing we have to do is, it is going to have to be definitely grassroots, because the big businesses, big politics are not going to help out Newt. It's definitely going to have to be a grassroots effort. Starting soon. He still, to my understanding, has campaign debt. And if we could start helping alleviate some of that, that can get the train rolling towards him running again. And we definitely have to try to find ways to start, funding something of the 2016 campaign for Newt, because it's not going to be able to happen in 1 year with, if we do it in 2016, it's going to have to be over years in order to have the money to beat the elites.
Yeah, you got to have the money. And the only way to get that from the grassroots is is for everybody to contribute something.
Yeah.
You know, you can either have one very rich man giving you $1 million or $10 million, or you get 10 million people to give you $5, you know. And I think that's how the battle can be won, but it's very difficult to do that in today's media world, because they refuse to let us get the message out. And, you know, dear Newt, man, God bless him. You know, he has such a positive, it's not just a negative thing. He offers solutions. He says, yeah, this is what's going on, and this is really negative, and this is what's happening, and this is really evil. But look, here's what we can do to solve this. Here's what we can do to get ourselves out of this mess. And he says, you know what? The scientific knowledge could just absolutely explode, bring us out of this economic stagnation or depression that we're in. And the thing that's discouraging, though, is whether you call them elite statists, whether you call them globalists, whether you call them one world order guys, whatever, there is a group of people at the top, and they are suppressing knowledge. Now, you remember I've brought up the name Lindsay Williams before. He's supposedly the guy that was the chaplain to some really high up muckety-muck elite for several months while they were up in Washington State in some retreat or something. And he basically formed relationships with them that have lasted even until now. And he still gets information from some of these globalist people. He said one time in one of his little radio interviews with somebody, he gets on the radio with anybody. In fact, we ought to try to get him on. But he said, the global elites have a cure for cancer. And I happen to know a very wealthy man who knew somebody that knew how to get treatment for cancer. And he saved his daughter's life. Now, it was extremely expensive, and he had to send her somewhere overseas. That's all I know. But his daughter came back with no cancer. And this is what Lindsey Graham has said, too. They have the cure, but they have no intention of letting it get into our hands. They are suppressing scientific knowledge. They are suppressing scientific research. They don't want us living till 90 and 100 years old, because then they got to pay for us with their unsustainable Social Security checks, okay? And, you know, they have been very forthcoming. Many, many, you can go on YouTube and you can search population control, and there is tons of people out there, these Agenda 21 purveyors, and they're saying, most of them are saying that they want to see the population of the world reduced by at least 40%. There are some who are saying they want the population of the world to be decimated to 80%. 80% of the world's population decimated. Now, think about the days when Russia was under Stalin and Lenin, and they were going through their revolution. After they got control, the communists got control, and they got control of all the land, what happened? Mass starvation, tens of millions, mass murders. They rounded up and hounded and shot down anybody, destroyed whole villages. Anybody who talked against the Russians was killed or jailed. Same thing happened in China. Mao killed even more people through starvation and persecution than Lenin and Stalin. And what the elites are doing, or what the globalists are doing to us right now, is like a carbon copy. They're following the plan. And basically what happens when you take all of the corn and you put it in the hands of the government, the people can't afford it anymore. Now, you start putting corn in our cars. You start running cars off of corn like Obama wants to do. Not only does everybody have to eventually buy a new car, because corn is going to destroy your car if it's a car that was built, say, before 2000, okay? So not only is it you're going to have to buy a new car, now your corn at the grocery store is going to cost more. Well, the United States doesn't eat as much corn as Mexico. Mexico has corn practically every meal, all right? They eat tortillas all the time. There's other countries.
Well, it's a high fructose corn syrup that gets us. That's in practically everything we eat.
Yeah, well, you know, corn syrup, corn starch, you name it, it's got corn in it, you know? So anyway, what I'm trying to say is their plan is going to starve people. The average person is going to starve to death when they take over control over United States farmland. It's happened every time they got a hold of anybody else. Korea is starving now. Vietnam is starving now. Any place where there's communism and the government takes control of the food supply, the people starve. And that's part of what their agenda is. Now, if we don't start listening to people like Newt and get rid of this Muslim threat quickly, we're not going to have the wherewithal, the money, or the strength to fight the globalist elites. That's all there is to it. You can't fight on both. It's too hard to fight on both of those fronts. We're fighting the Muslims on the one hand and the globalists on the other hand. We've got to do one of them in so that we can then start turn our attention to the other one. What else you got?
Oh, I've got all kinds of stuff. I'm multitasking right now. but let's see. Well, you bring up energy and things of that nature. And so I will talk about, you know, this is one of my favorite subjects, and you talk about technology. Of course, this is green energy, and I don't know, a lot of folks know, but Newt does consider himself an environmentalist, or at least what he dubbed, or coined the phrase, green conservatism. So I'll go ahead and play a clip on that.
For it TV, the world is thinking.
I think people care in a sort of cultural checkoff way. We at American Solutions, we did 6 surveys last year, and out of all the questions we asked, the highest score was, do you think we have an obligation to protect the endowment we've been given by our Creator in terms of the environment? It was like 95-3. Higher than anything else we asked about. And I think people vaguely generally believe that. But as long as a candidate sounds like they're sort of inside the envelope, you know, so if the candidate gets up and says, I love green, I'm really committed to green, green's really important, I think that'd be very important for us to do things for the environment, I'm for the environment, people kind of check it off. They don't check off the Iraq war, they don't check off the economy, they don't check off social issues. And my guess is if you actually broke it down in detail, you'd find probably somewhere between 6 and 10% of the country actually takes, in a voting sense, where you are in the environment with enormous sincerity, unless they're convinced that you are anti-environment, in which case the number goes up to about 80%. I mean, the country does have, and I happen to agree with this, I grew up I was born in Harrisburg, and I grew up in a context of a family that belonged to that took the Pennsylvania Fish and Game Commission magazine, had a cabin up in the mountains near State College, believed in the Gifford Pinchot Theodore Roosevelt model of conservation and a republicanism that cared about the environment. And I think that's right. I think if somebody says to you, I don't care about the environment, you have to wonder whether you should allow them to be in public office because they, in fact, don't understand anything about stewardship.
Okay, but so what you're describing is essentially motherhood and apple pie.
No, I'm describing culture. I'm describing the fact that this would not have been true 40 years ago. I think this country has moved very substantially towards saying you ought to care about clean air, you ought to care about clean water, you ought to care about biodiversity, you ought to care about global warming. And if I don't think you, I may argue with you about what the solution is, but if you don't care about it,
okay.
I don't want you in public office. That is a big change from 40 years ago when those questions would not have been asked.
And is it a decisive public issue? In other words, do people win and lose elections on this stuff?
It's decisive for 6 to 10% as a fundamental voting issue. But if you are anti-environment,
okay.
I think it's almost impossible today to win as a person who does not have some sense of concern for the environment.
Al, let's talk about, I mean, you live and breathe this stuff in terms of selling expensive products.
Well, I think Newt is very correct. I think being in favor...
That's no fun.
Well, no, I think he's right because most people won't consider buying your car if they think you're not a technology leader or you're not in favor of covering the environment issues. But I think when it comes down to on the transaction, it's can I make the monthly payment? And so while they may want a plug-in hybrid, if they can only afford a flex fuel vehicle or what we call a battery-assisted hybrid, a milder hybrid, that's what they'll buy. That doesn't mean they're anti-environment. They have to be practical as well.
Yeah, and I actually saw, I was at an Earth Day festival, I guess back in April, and I seen one of those plug-in hybrids, and, you know, they're a little, I don't know, I can't remember exactly how much it costs. One day I'll be able to afford one, but that's hopefully what my next car is going to be, will be one of these plug-in hybrids. They are so sweet, I tell you what. That would definitely be a dream. I tell you what, I'd love to own one of those. But I do see some other callers in, and I don't know if they'd like to chime in or if they're just listening to the show. But if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial, and we'll get you in to our kind of our tribute to Newt Gingrich and why America still needs him to be our president. Also people who are listening in and not on the line, just give us a call at 347-574-28. Actually, if we do go into extended period tonight, which we normally do during the Wednesday night shows, we are working on a couple things for this coming up Wednesday. It just depends on who gets back with me first on which guests or topics we'll have on for this Saturday, not Saturday, this Wednesday at 10 p.m. It's September already. But we'll be looking at that. And so... But bringing it back to you, Cindy, I know I'm kind of the resident tree hugger on our normal shows, and actually that's what they call me at work too. I'm the resident tree hugger, and my supervisor at work, he's a conservative too, and we're going to have him on the show one day. Very intelligent guy, and I'm looking forward to having him on the show in about a month or so. But he says it's kind of rare to have a conservative environmentalist, but be that as it may, go ahead.
Well, you say you're a tree hugger, and I think I'm even stronger than a tree hugger. I'm a tree whisperer.
Oh, a tree whisperer. I like that.
This is a true story. Back in 2004, when we had three hurricanes back-to-back through here, I went out and prayed for my trees in my yard. I love trees. So I went out and I put my hands on my trees that I wanted to keep, the ones that were close to the house. I didn't want them falling on the house, and I wanted to keep them. Big, huge, I'm talking huge oak trees, big, huge sycamores, pine trees. So I went out there, pray for every one of the trees that I thought could possibly fall on my house. You know that not one of those things fell during those hurricanes.
See? They appreciated
it. All along the perimeter, we had trees come down all around, but the ones that I prayed for did not fall down. My husband said, "You couldn't have prayed for a few more trees. Do you know how much work I have?" So anyway, I'm a tree, tree whisperer. But I tell you what, you get an appreciation for wind when you stand and you look out your window and you see the earth beneath the trees rising up and falling down, rising up and falling down. You could see the grass would come up where the roots were just trying to come up, and then it would go back down. It would go up and go back down. It was the scariest thing, but I truly believe that God sent angels to make sure that my trees did not fall. So that was nice.
Well, and Ron, they appreciate it. Probably the roots that were deeper, and this is, you know my belief system, Cindy. And so perhaps my take on that is that, you know, the deep roots that were inside the ground, you know, they kept a stronger hold for you so they wouldn't crash into your house because they appreciated that you loved them and you didn't want them to fall.
Well, oak trees don't have a tap root. They all their roots are up towards the top. Oak trees don't have a tap root. All the roots are up towards the tree.
They don't want the one that goes straight down. They more branch out and then go down.
Right.
But they don't have as you said the one that anchors them that way. But they do have the ones that spread, and then as they spread, they do go deeper. And so but I know what you're talking about on that.
But, you know, Newt was highly misunderstood when it comes to conservation. He, when he sat on that couch with Nancy Pelosi, he made a huge mistake. But it wasn't a mistake in that he agreed with her. That's not what he was saying. He was saying, we need to study the issue. We need to find out what it is, if there's anything we can do. Or if global warming is caused by us, or if there is global warming. He was saying, we don't have a definitive answer. We've got scientists saying one thing, we've got scientists saying another thing. And see, that's the environmentalist wackos don't want to concede that. They don't want to concede that they could be wrong. So they do things like those two London scientists where they, you know, got together and falsified the temperature records so that now, you know, it made it look like we had global warming. And they were found out. And how many more are doing stuff like that? But Newt cares about the environment, and that's as it should be. If we don't have clean water, we will be like those third world countries that they all get sick, they get parasites, they get worms, they get bacteria, viruses, and they die. Carmen, my daughter-in-law, has a cousin in Mexico right now who's dying from parasite. He's not going to live. And that's because he drinks the water out there. They don't have a choice. And you look at all India and Africa, all the places where they have nasty water, and the people are forced to drink this stagnant, nasty water. You have to have clean water. And nobody wants to ruin our lakes. Nobody wants to ruin our rivers. Nobody wants to ruin our oceans. I take high offense to anyone who accuses me, because I'm a conservative Republican, accuses me of wanting to annihilate the environment. I take high offense to that.
Right, and I don't think it's that big. Well, and some actually do think we want to destroy it, but I think others have. And I do see there's some other folks who, like, get on the line, and 561, I see that you're next, area code 561, so we'll be bringing you in shortly after my brief comments here. And that is, I think that two things. One, there are those, you know, as you pointed out, who think and say that they were out to, you know, destroy the planet. But there are also those who believe, you know, of course, they look at this biblically, and where they talk about how they think that, you know, we're here to dominate the earth, you know, be fruitful, multiply, and dominate the earth, which instead of being stewards of the earth, which gives humanity the right, and some would even contend that they think, some folks think it's a God-given right to use the planet up as they see fit, as holding dominion over the earth. And there's some who blame, of course, and they point at conservatives more so on that because of there's a more religious background with conservatives and anything else, you know, than liberals.
Well,
and so at this time,
a lot of people,
I make this
that's okay. Go ahead, bring in the caller.
Yeah, let's go ahead and bring him in. We could come back here. We got plenty of time, but it looks like we may go to some of the extended period. And just to let the folks know who are not on the line yet, if you want to be a part of, listen to, or chime in on the extended period, call us at 347-945-7428 and then push the 1 on your number dial or send a message through chat or to me, the host, on Facebook, which – name there is Robert Jetter Jr., so check that out. Or a message on the page Bard's Logic Political Talk, and send a message there, because if you do not call in the next half hour, then unfortunately your audio will be cut off and will not be able to hear the or be a part of the extended version. So without any further ado, I will be letting in 561 on the line. And thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Good. Fine, thank you. It's a very interesting and informative show.
And who are we speaking with tonight? Where are you from?
I'm from Delray Beach.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, hi.
Great. And your name?
Yeah, Delray Beach, Florida. I was thinking, don't we have the technology in order to get the necessary clean drinking water to the people themselves?
Sure, we do.
So why is it not implemented?
That's a good question, buddy.
Excuse my ignorance, but you know, if we've got the knowledge to do it, what does it make? What does it take? Funds? Funds are out there.
You know what? Well, first of all, it does take money. And so people are shy about, you know, spending money on things. But you would think, you know, what do you spend money on? You spend money on water, that's for sure, you know. So that should be done. There should be no question about that. It depends on the question. Depends on where you're talking about. Here in the United States, there's no excuse, absolutely no excuse, for us not to clean our water. As far as foreign countries, especially third world countries, you've got very corrupt leadership. Very corrupt dictators are leading most of the African nations and a lot of the other nations too. Look at all the Arab nations, the corrupt leadership there. When
of
you
course.
Have corrupt leadership, huh?
Yes, of course. Yes, I must think.
Yeah.
Sure.
So when you have corrupt leadership, they don't want a large population. They're just as happy. It's like I was trying to tell you earlier, the globalists that want to have a one world order and keep everybody in subjection, and basically in slavery is what they're after.
Sure.
They can't have too many people. The population is way too large for them to handle. They've got to get rid of some people, and like I said, there's some people go as high as 80% of the world's population. They feel like we need to depopulate that many of us. some only as much as 40%. But basically they all agree, of the ones I've heard, the population control people that I've heard speak about it, say that there needs to be a depopulation drive. Well, how do you do that? Either by making people sick, getting them in the middle of wars, you behead them, you, I mean, there's several different ways you can do it. But basically everything that you see going on in the world today is heading towards that, to depopulation. Now, you got World Vision, you've got that Graham's organization, you've got a whole bunch of, I'm sorry?
Yes, I'm listening to you. Yes.
Yeah, this Samaritan's Purse, that's what it is. You got Samaritan's Purse and those other organizations, they're Christian organizations that are trying to bring clean water to people in foreign countries, third world nations, and they're doing a good job, but they're overwhelmed. There's too much to do. There's too many places. I can't even find anybody to go to the place where Carmen's family lives, down there where their water is so bad. I can't find anybody who will go down there. They're just stretched to the max everywhere. So why don't we use the technology? Probably money.
Now, if it's a matter of money, that's one thing. I think that it sounds like total corruption, and what you probably have to do is just isolate those people that are the corrupt people that are the controlling factors, and eliminate them.
Just I agree
one,
with you.
One, but yes, but I think the problem is, I think it should be a domino sort of theory that you take one section, concentrate on that, wipe out the controlling factors that are corrupt, establish a democratic or some sort of a government that will not allow it to go backwards and only forwards, and then go on to the next one. I think that the problem is that we use the shotgun approach, so to speak, that we're going to try and help this one, and then try and help that one, and try and help this, and scatter our resources all around. I think we've got to establish one area and then move on to the next and then move on to the next until the people themselves can live in a humane way, establish the economic society so that people can survive, an agricultural society, and then move on from there and hold on to it. I just don't understand why we just try to take care of everything in the entire world without establishing some sort of a staging system, one after the other after the other. A domino theory seems to me to be the best way to go. Pick an area that you're going to start and concentrate on that, and let's concentrate on getting rid of, however it, and whatever it takes, these corrupt individuals, and secure that area.
You're absolutely correct. You have an awesome plan, and the thing is, not enough people are recognizing that. What they're doing is, they're put their hands. They're the cowboy that has their hands up in the air with the shotgun. The other guy has the shotgun approach. He is look at what they're putting at us all at the same time. Benghazi, IRS. The last thing, I mean, you just go down the list of all the things Obama's got going on at the same time, okay? And they're just shoving. It's like,
oh, extortion 17. What about that? We just covered extortion 17.
Extortion 17.
With the downing of those SEAL Team six folks. We just had them on the show this past Wednesday.
Right. They're putting so much at us. They're shooting an automatic weapon at us. And there's so many bullets coming at us at the same time. There's so many corrupt things going on at the same time. People have thrown their hands up, and they're saying, okay, I give up. I give up. I don't know what to do, you know. They're totally confused. They're all wrapped up in their own problems. They're, you know, totally diverted by the day-to-day problems they have that Obama and the other people have created. And so I like your solution. Pick one thing and have at it.
And secure it. Absolutely, positively secure it. And don't let it slide back. We made that mistake under Obama's regime, so to speak, when it came to Iraq. When it came to Iraq, we had control of Iraq. Obama went and put in President Bush was putting in, you know, had his hand in it. But you know, President Bush, we lose sight that President Bush, if I'm correct, the last 2 years of his presidency, there was a democratically controlled Congress. His hands were tied. You never really hear that brought up. His hands were tied. So he couldn't move forward with his plan and program. We took over Iraq, fine. Now, with that being taken over, establish a puppet regime, establish an economic area where business can continue and flourish. As far as the expense of the war, you know what? If you go in there and you liberate a country, use their resources to pay yourself back. When you pay back for that expense, sure. Then let the country have at it or use their finances to stabilize the country. But we should be paid back for our efforts that we did, and make sure that the country doesn't slide back with you. So we get in a president that's inept and just tells everybody exactly when something's going to be pulled out, and we lose that country.
Yep.
So all those people, we absolutely lose that country. I'll tell you one other thing, which may be off the beaten path, so to speak. I am very disappointed in the Republican Party, or the Conservative Party, so to speak, that they're not in touch with the average person like myself and others. They should really, really use us as a suggestion box, because we know how the election was lost this past presidential election, and it was very, very easy. President Obama said to his people, I'm relatively certain that this is what transpired, just tell me where the votes are. That's it. I don't want to hear about this whole business. Just tell me where the votes are. And he went out there and got them. He got the votes. He got the unions. He got the schools. He got whatever it was. He concentrated on that. Now, the other people, Republicans, conservatives, for which I am proud to be, but nevertheless, they weren't listening to the little guy who was the voter. They were talking about secular progressives and kicking the can down the road. And you know, 99% of the people did not understand what they were talking about. That is the biggest problem. I have the biggest problem in the world, because I cannot get through to this ivory tower to talk to anyone and just tell them some really good, constructive, creative ideas. It's the small guy, the voting person, like myself, that they have to be in touch with. Now, Reynolds Priebus, I don't know of him one way or another, but they made some really big mistakes. Mitt Romney had mentioned the 47%, and then he turned scared and said, oh my God, yeah, he recanted that, whatever. He should have stood his ground and said, yes, the 47% of the people will not vote for me because the government feels that they're not smart enough to make it on their own without the government being there. So
doesn't that tell you what kind of presidency he would have had? It would have been a completely political correct presidency. There would have been no solutions.
It would have been a politically correct presidency in what respect?
Well, it's like he, you know, as soon as somebody pressured him a little bit about his 47% comment, oh, he's backpedaling. Oh, you can't say that. That's politically incorrect to bring up how the 47% of our population is totally lazy on their butts, sponging off everybody else.
Here's the thing. I think it was his handlers. I don't think it was his ideology. I think they said, oh, my God, you made a big mistake. We're going to alienate these people. Instead of taking the high road and saying, you know what? What I said from my heart. What I said was true. And I think we should stand behind it. I think that the present administration that was running for re-election doesn't think these 47% are smart enough to exist without them. And I'm saying that they are. And I'm asking for their 47% vote. So I think it's how the guy was handled that was the mistake. I think what they say and the way that they say it was a mistake. They don't listen to the small person like myself, and they should. I'm not talking about my ego. I'm talking about getting this country back on track. And I don't know how to go about doing it. I hear nothing but, well, this is the problem, and this is the problem, and this is the problem. I don't hear anything about the solution now.
Mm-hmm.
I know we all know the problem. We can tune into the news and day in and day out and know the problem itself. But talk about the solution. You got a midterm election coming up, they're not even really addressing how to control this runaway train, this Obama train.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different ways to ultimately approach it, and they're not dealing with it at all. That's what kind of irks me. I think it's about time they kind of listen to a small person like myself. I send emails and whatever it is. So it's just not a good situation. We've got that midterm election.
Sir, what's your name again? What's your name again?
My name is Barry.
Larry?
Barry, with a B, Barry.
Oh, Barry, Barry, okay.
Barry.
Barry, you're absolutely correct, Barry, but we're dealing with an elitist attitude. They refuse to believe. See, they know that they've, for several, many, many decades now, they've been dumbing us down in our schools. They've been desensitizing us to the violence on television. They've cremated our brains by giving us all kinds of stupid things to watch on television that absolutely defy human reason. And,
exactly.
And so they think, and they've made our men into women and our women into men, and so they think that they have us in a place now where we are too stupid to know how to fight them and how to fight back. But I think they're going to find otherwise. What do you think, Barry?
I think that the only way that we can fight back is if we decide to fight back. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't decided as a conservative group, so to speak, we're dealing with people that are not the swiftest in the world. And we've got to talk their language. They're not going to learn to talk our language. We've got to talk their language. We've got to find out what their problems are. We've got to appeal to them. We've got to appeal to their vote. And we've got to stop this situation that has been totally undermining and this country economically and militarily and emotionally. you've got a lot of people out there that are out of work, and it takes not only an economic toll, it takes an emotional toll.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've got to start to make a decision to talk to people like me and you and others.
Real quick, I just want to bring in
folks from the audience. This is from Tessa here in the chat. Is you know, when it comes to the 47%, as you say, Gingrich broke down the 47%, and he was the only one who did. And if Romney doesn't have the cojones to tell his handlers to stuff it, and that's something I think Newt Gingrich would have done. I think Newt Gingrich would have said, "Look, you are not. This is my campaign. You're not going to tell me, you know, how to react with the American people." And going back to what Tess was saying is, you know, if Romney didn't have the cojones to tell his handlers to stuff it, he would have made a good president anyway. And they said if it's 47%, only about 17%, now historically it is, she said, 14 to 16% are on welfare, so 17% on welfare. Many of those also work. We have those folks on welfare and the work. The rest are Social Security and teens who do not make enough money to pay taxes and so forth. And thank
right.
you, Tessa, for contributing that in the chat. Real quick question, Barry, is
yes.
in the 2012 primaries, who was the candidate you most supported?
In the 2012, Newt Gingrich.
Yeah. Oh, okay,
yeah.
Awesome.
Well, so you knew the brilliance of Newt Gingrich. You could see that.
You know what? I knew the brilliance of Newt Gingrich when I first heard him. And I like to keep an open mind and so forth, but I tell you something. The man is tremendously intelligent. He's tremendously poised. He is not afraid to take on a debate and take on a debate one-on-one, straight ahead, without a lot of tap dancing and carrying on. And he would have definitely won the election. I think it was a matter of all of a sudden Mitt Romney and his people just outspent him, and you lost a great, great opportunity to have a fantastic
mm-hmm.
man be in the White House, and this country would be a thousand times better. There wouldn't be Russia running a roughshod over the Ukraine, and there wouldn't be an ISIS. You know, as strong and as powerful and whatever it would be, there'd be action taken. There wouldn't be us looked down upon, but admired. And my big problem is that we've got this midterm election. Let's at least stop this Obama situation, number one. Number two, let's get behind someone like Newt Gingrich, who's got the guts to go ahead and to run and to do whatever has to be done. What state are you in?
Barry, what state are you in?
Florida.
You're in Florida. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yes.
we got to get a Republican Senate in there if we're going to stop Obama's agenda and be able to set our own agenda. We've got to have a Republican Senate. When Newt Gingrich was Speaker back in the late 90s. Mid to late, you saw how he took the reins and took control of the purse, and he got so much done because he did that. Now that's what happened to George Bush. George W.
Mm-hmm.
He had troops over there. He had troops in Iraq. He had troops in Afghanistan still, and when we gave him nothing but a Democrat Congress to work with, what they did was they did what Newt did to them back in the 90s, only it was in the opposite direction. They moved him towards destroying our economy rather than in encouraging our economy. So basically what they did was they said, you're going to give us our stimulus package, and you're going to give us everything else we want, or you don't get your money for your troops, okay?
Mm-hmm.
what we need is a Speaker of the House, the type that Newt Gingrich was right now. We need that. So we need to get Boehner out of there and put in somebody like Trey Gowdy or Rand Paul, or, you know, somebody like that that knows how to work the purse. And then, I'm sorry, Rand Paul is in the Senate, so sorry about that. Anyway, and then we need, and again, we need to replace the idiot over there in the Senate with somebody who is truly conservative.
Right, exactly.
And then we can stop Obama. We can stop him. We can absolutely shut him down. He's been moving money around. He'll take money that was supposed to be earmarked for something else that Congress approved, okay, and then he'll take it and spend it on something totally unapproved. You cannot let a president get away with that, and that's what they're allowing.
You know where I think the real big problem is? That's on a smaller scale, and I appreciate that, and you're absolutely right. On a larger scale, I have two words which we never implemented, and I tried to get through. And it's called a preemptive strike. Now let me just explain for one moment what it means. I'm not talking about militarily, by no means.
I know what you mean.
I'm talking about when I see the possibility of the government being shut down unless they get their budget through. The Republican Party or the Conservative Party, or call it what you want, should say and get on and spend money, spend airtime, and say, let me tell you just what's going to happen, okay, to everybody out there. The government is going to go ahead under Obama, the Obama administration, the controlled Congress, whatever it may be, is going to say, you know what? We are going to shut down the government unless we get our free credit card, unless we're allowed to spend whatever we want to spend, unless we get the budget that we want in place. And you just mark my words. This is what's going to happen to you and to you and to you. And this is exactly what's going to happen. Then when it ultimately comes about, you can say, you see, this is exactly what I said would happen. So then what you've done is you've taken all the air out of their balloon. You've taken all the fright out of it. And this goes for everything that he's about to say. We know where he's going. We know exactly where he's going with whatever it might be. So the idea is to tell the people ahead of time, and then they will say, you know what? The Republicans were right, or the conservatives were right. They go, this is exactly what was said, what was broadcast, what was advertised like 3 weeks ago. And mm-hmm. and now they can't turn around and say, oh, because of the Congress or the House of Representatives and those Republicans that we've got this situation. Because we had told them way before that this is his game plan. So let's do a preemptive strike on everything. When he gets and makes a speech on TV to the public itself, we should have a speech, not just the State of the Union rebuttal. We should have someone come on for 15 minutes and say, well, what he's saying is just not so. What he's proposing is just not good. Why isn't there something to counteract something like that? That would put him in check.
Well, because the media is controlled by liberals, that's why, the progressives. I shouldn't say liberals. I should say progressives.
Right. Okay, well, it could be the liberal progressives and so forth. But, you're right. But you know what? The purse, the dollars, you can buy airtime. It pays to buy airtime to strengthen up
call a press conference. You can call a press conference. You can get your word out one way or the other. If you're in a high enough position, John Boehner can get a press conference anytime he wants to.
Okay, that's great. So when people ultimately hear Obama coming out and saying things that number one are inaccurate, and number two are just for his own agenda, and goes unchecked. Yeah, when you turn on some of the other stations or a conservative station, you may hear something about it in a slight way. No, it should be addressed right there and then. There should be a counterbalance to someone that is not telling the truth, or that is not taking the proper stand, or is about to do something that will be detrimental to the country, or to our national interest in general. So if that's the case, that should be implemented.
Don't you think Newt Gingrich's contract with America was a preemptive strike? Don't you think that's what that was all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But in the meantime, the conservatives pulled the chair out from underneath him.
The neoconservatives pulled the chair out from under him.
The neoconservatives, the ultra, is that
right.
It? The ultra-conservatives?
No, he was the ultra-conservative. The people who took the rug out of him were the elite group, the leadership elite, the same mentality that changed our green paper rules of our party in Tampa in 2012 was the same mentality of the people who brought charge after charge, nearly 100 charges against him of ethics violations? None of them stuck. None of them had any kind of standing, and yet that's what they threw at him, because he was making real changes that they were not. See, he wrote the contract with America, and they all signed it. They all signed it, and yet they didn't really expect him to fulfill it. And yet he went in there in Congress, and he fulfilled. He started fulfilling them one after the other, and they say, hey, we got to do something about that. He's actually making good on the promises he made these people. What the heck? He can't do that. So they had to start tearing him down before he got his whole list done.
I think what they were pseudo conservatives. They were basically wolf in sheep's clothing. If you really want to do something good for the country, no matter what label you put on it, it'll be good for the country. So they shut him down. Whoever they is, whatever group they are, they did not do this country justice. They took a good man, and they just almost hurt him. Is Newt going to run for in 16?
We don't know yet. He hasn't said
Actually, Barry, what we're hoping is if we do more shows like these, and we get more word out, and then we get word out, out to Newt. And one thing that I'm going to do is I recently got LinkedIn with Newt this past week on LinkedIn. I mean, it may be not him directly, but, people who handle his LinkedIn account. And that just happened recently this week. So I'll be sending of course, he gets tons of stuff, so be that as it may, we'll see where it goes. I'll be sending the audio or the podcast over to his LinkedIn and see from there. But if he sees it, I believe if he starts seeing, a swelling of support for him to run again in 2016, such as people paying attention to what he's talking about, people talking about him being president, and then, of course, financially, if folks can just start contributing towards paying down his campaign debt, that I believe he still has. I have to do some more research on that, but I believe he still does. But if we can, kind of draft him, kind of like Washington was drafted to run, then I think there may be. Of course, there's going to be a lot of money, of course, that would have to be involved, too, from the grassroots, because I don't think, and other folks I talk to don't know if the other PACs will support him, just because, the way he wants to change Washington, and they don't want that, and that's why he was attacked the way he was in 2012.
Now, right now, I don't know of any place that is considering him running. Cause, I mean, I've been getting emails from Newsmax, and they were asking folks if they would vote for Romney again or who they thought that they would vote for, in a list of about 20 possibilities on who they would vote for. And unfortunately, Gingrich is not on that list. But I think, as I said, with more shows like these and more exposure, getting out the nude help, we really want him and almost desperately need him to run again. Perhaps he'll go ahead and throw his hat back in the ring, which, you know, I think would be the best for the country, at least when it comes to electing the president.
Exactly. I'll tell you one other thing, too, is that a lot of times when they ask for contributions, they start off with, well, $200, how about $100, how about... You know, if everyone that really cared about New and really cared about the conservative party, so to speak, that if everyone put a $5 bill into an envelope and sent it, or a $5 check, I'm not talking about a $10, $20, or $100, I think he would have a tremendous stockpile of money. I think when people ask for a lot, they just, if it's on the computer, they just hit delete, or whatever it may be. A whole bunch of small money coming in would be plenty of money for him to run, at least to establish himself as a viable candidate. And if the conservative party itself really wanted change, they don't shoot themselves in the foot like they just did with Romney and so on and so forth. They would all get behind someone like Newt, because it's not going to be an easy campaign. It's not going to be an easy campaign at all. And you need someone that can really debate it. Someone, when Newt got up there during one of the debates, and one of the moderators started talking about his past experience with domestically with his wife and so on and so forth, and he went ahead and took this guy directly to task right off the bat. We're here to discuss politics. I'm paraphrasing, something politics that concern the United States of America, not to open up to this stuff. And I think you're way out of line. And he took this guy. He's got the guts and the intelligence, the poise. He's got the whole package.
Wasn't that awesome, Barry? Wasn't that awesome when he did that?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't that awesome when he did that? That was just so cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm telling you, but Newt's got the whole package to go ahead and to handle whatever comes along. And, you know, without having to stop and think for 20 minutes, you know, how am I going to approach this? He has a slow, poised, stealth bomber approach to whatever it is. He goes right for whatever the question is. He doesn't hold back. He says exactly what's on his mind, and it makes sense. So that's the person you need. But we've all got to get together. If it's going to be a country divided, then it's not going to stand. If it's going to be a party that's divided, it's not going to stand. You've got to go ahead and establish some good policies, and you've got to get someone that can represent their party. And once again, I know I sound like a broken record. You've got to listen to the small people like me, and the 10,000 others like me that care passionately about the way this country is going and what's going to be for our children, grandchildren, and so forth, and for our own existence. Mm-hmm. We always look way ahead. So, you know, we live on a day-to-day basis. The average person does. So, you know.
Well, Barry, you know, as far as listening to the average everyday person, that's the problem I have with Mitt Romney. He's a part of the elite people that have that mentality that They're above everybody. They're smarter than everybody, and you need to listen to them because you don't know what's best for you. And what was wonderful and kind of brought us conservatives together, actually brought us out of the woodwork, was the rise of the Tea Party and with their successes that they had in 2010. This brought people together, and it gave us hope to say, hey, we can all come together somewhere. There is a venue where we can all gather, and we can be one group that has power. And that was working very well until the Tea Party was infiltrated by Democrats and neoconservatives both. And so then they started, degrading the Tea Party, and then they became a byword, and so they haven't really had the presence. But what they started has continued on. When you look at all the conservative organizations that have sprung up, all the Facebook pages, all the Twitter accounts, all the, you know, just everything that you see out there now, you're obviously hooked up with something. You have information. I have information. And now we get on blog talk shows and we talk to each other and we can actually get word out about certain candidates. You look at the Senate conservatives group that is trying to get the Rhino conservatives defeated and replaced by true conservative Republicans. And right. You have a lot of things going on that was started by the Tea Party movement. And even though the Tea Party has kind of fallen out of graces in a few people's eyes, you can't deny the fact that they brought people together. They brought the conservatives together under one roof, and they brought us to the point where we realized we could. There was other people like us. We're not alone in the world. There's millions of us.
Absolutely. Now, if the Tea Party... I think maybe I'm wrong, but if the Tea Party is too ultra conservative, if they would look to modify slightly so that they would bring more people into the fold, I'm not saying to dilute their values that much, but we've got to see that.
Give me an example of what you think they ought to. I don't know, put in the background or not put as a priority, or what are they doing to that you think is too conservative?
I'll tell you something, just in general, because I just get an overview and an overfeeling about it. I haven't been such as a staunch...
But think about where you got that that feeling about it. Where that came from. Is it actually something you saw the Tea Party do, or is it something you heard was reported that they did on the news?
No, it was basically neither. It's just that there was some rumbles in general about the Tea Party. Some conservatives were very much for it. Other conservatives think that they were too ultra-conservative. The Tea Party is too ultra-conservative. So I'm just saying in general, there should be some sort of a mid-ground or modify maybe one-third of your stance a little bit and bring more people into the fold.
Barry, let me make a point there because that is something that I've heard a lot. Many, many people talk like that. Say that the Tea Party's too conservative or that the conservatives are ruining everything because they're too conservative, but nobody can tell me exactly what we're doing that is too conservative. This rumor, this feeling of too conservative, this label that has been put on us, has been put there by the news media, and they have not explained it.
Uncompromising in the term they use.
Yeah, no news media have explained it. Yeah. What did we not compromise on? We've compromised and compromised till there's nothing left to compromise. We have taken things off the table. We took abortion off the table this whole election. We hardly even spoke about it. Everything was taken off the table, and yet we're still too conservative. So what I'm saying is we have been labeled that, and there's been a general feeling of it, but nobody can say this person did this, this policy was too conservative. Nobody's saying exactly what they mean by that.
Oh, okay. I fall into that category because, truthfully, I haven't looked into it. What I've been hearing is just on the periphery, on the outside of it. I really haven't looked in depth. So
exactly, that is the plan. That's the strategy. Make the conservatives look too conservative. That's the strategy, and they're winning with that. We cannot be let. Anytime you hear somebody say that, from now on, I want you to say to them, where did you get that idea? What are they doing that's too conservative? Let me know what it is. You won't be able to get an answer.
So I'll tell you what. It makes sense. It makes exactly sense what you're saying. So if that's the case, what I would like to see is something put up in the way of some public like I said, either on the news or in the newspapers or something where someone can cut out something and show that this is basically what the Tea Party stands for. This is basically what let's get a little bit more specific. And then they can see that maybe the generalities of the Tea Party, maybe they can debunk some of the things that I've been hearing. And I'm one of them that has heard something like that, and I can't honestly say that I can put my finger on it. The only thing is that when you hear enough of it, you say, well, maybe there is too much of that. If in fact the information in general, the feeling in general that's gone out is that sort of a feeling,
you've heard the old adage. You tell a lie enough times, and people will begin to believe it.
Well, absolutely. But I think along with that, you're absolutely right. Along with that is let's find a way to expose the lie. Let's find let's take someone like me who's been thinks that's the case, and obviously I'm wrong. Based upon that, or I'm not knowledgeable enough to say something about it, but I know that in general, if that's the feeling that I've got, and I'm a moderately intelligent person, if that's the feeling I've got, then that's the feeling that so many other people like me have.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, and the lie is out there, let's say, by the way, this is exactly what we stand for, or this is basically what we stand for. And do something to get the word out. It seems that that the Democrats always find a way to get something out somehow, press releases or whatever it might be, or right before the election, and whatever it is. Once again, the people, the public, have not been made aware of what a conservative is, and.
Uh-huh.
I think that's so important. I think that preemptive strike that I'm talking about verbally, okay, once again, not militarily, but verbally, is a very, very important thing. They get up there, they say, whether it's Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or whoever it may be, and they say things or Chuck Schumer, and they say things that are just not good for the country or a bunch of lies, or whatever it may be. 5 minutes right after that, the average person sitting by their TV can hear somebody discuss it and show the ridiculous or harmful things that were said, or the things that were actually a lie. They do that after like half an hour, 45 minutes. They fact check, and they do this and they do that. In the meantime, the people have gone to bed. In the meantime, they accomplish absolutely nothing. They should do it on prime time. They should have it on conservative news. They should have ads that say, "Don't listen to me." Turn on Fox News or something or other. Don't listen to me. Give yourself. You know how many people I've spoken to, and it's all like, "Oh, this Hannity, this Fox News is terrible." I said, "Well, you know, when did you tune in?" "Oh, I never watched that show." So if you never watch it, what are you basing it on?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's so many people that actually go ahead and say that. "Oh, I've never watched it." So I can't call someone stupid or foolish or whatever. But I'm saying, so I don't understand. So how do you get your opinion if you don't see the other side of it?
We all need, you know what we have here going on? I'll tell you what one solution is, and it's kind of right along the lines of what you were just suggesting. Here in this county, we are trying to turn a decades-long Democratic stronghold into a Republican stronghold. And in 2012, we got a good start on it. And this year, we have increased our Republicans in this county again. And by November election, we will probably increase it again. We're going to win some of these races. And so we're doing it. But the reason we're doing it is because our people started getting busy. There's a guy in our REC who has begun a letter-writing campaign to the editor. So there's all these marvelous letters to the editor been going into the newspaper. And some of them are getting published. And then we've got these voter guides that we have put out, because in our county, ridiculous as it sounds, our primaries aren't really primaries, because almost all of our races, our local races, are all nonpartisan. It's illegal for any candidate to declare what party he belongs to. But the REC, it's common knowledge. Anybody can get that information. So we got the information, and we have begun to push candidates that were Republican and conservative Republican. In 2012, we supported just Republicans, and we found out that you have to make sure they're actually conservative Republicans. So this year we even went farther, and we took a vote on between the conservatives who we figured had the more conservative record, because some of the guys we put in before started voting for expensive things and higher taxes. And what we need, we're the, out of 67 counties here in Florida, we are, Volusia County is number 3 at the bottom of the list, at the top of the list for our millage rate. We have a higher millage rate than every other county except 2 other ones. And so this is disgraceful, because our income level falls somewhere at the bottom half of the spectrum. We're way down on the bottom half in as far as our income is concerned. So it's way off kilter. And what we've done is we've started getting information out. We started working the streets. We're pounding the pavement. There's been some people that, because of this Tea Party thing happening, we have woken up and we've said, "Wow, they did it over there. They did it over there. This state did it. That state did it. They turned a blue state into a red state. They turned a blue state into a red state. We can do it too." And so we started working because of what we heard going on in 2010. And so all steadily over the years, we've been able to win more and more. And I wish every county in Florida would adopt our strategy and start working on this, because you can do it in any county. Well, there's some down south you might not be able to do it in, but
so you go one little piece at a time.
Yeah.
And and you create a stronghold with that one area, correct?
Yep, that's correct. Well,
you see, that's the same thing that I was talking about when we were talking about the situation with water, with corruption, with everything. Remember I said the domino sort of theory? One piece at a time. It's like a puzzle. One piece at a time. Take it, make it a stronghold, continue on to the next neighbor. But that's exactly what I'm talking about. Another thing is that I think it's very, very important to get out the message, not just in the editorial thing. It's got to be an easy read. A lot of times, once again, we're dealing with the elite, this, that, and the other thing, and they have no concept of what the average person, it's like a highway sign. If it takes more than 3 seconds to read it, it's not good. Okay, and it's the
right.
Same thing. You get these long-winded letters coming down. I mean, who's got the time to sit and to get right to the point? Tell me, give me the Reader's Digest version of it. Give me the capsule. What's your point? Where are you going with it? That sort of thing. Number one. Whenever anything is published or spoken, get right to the point. Newt does that. Bingo. That's what he does. And that's what we need. The other thing is that when it comes to the press or whatever it may be, letters to the editor are fine. I think that the only people that really read the letters to the editor are not really. It's not really. They're looking for a little that sports, whatever it may be. I think that if people appeal to ethnic papers, ethnic publications. That come out, and you can show them what the conservative or what the Tea Party movement is and what they stand for, not in a long 26-paragraph thing, in a short highlighted. I don't care if it's not grammatically correct to highlight the word "this is a report" in the middle of a sentence. Highlight it. Do it.
Okay.
Get the word out. When I do certain reports and so forth, I highlight things that I feel are important. I don't care if it's not grammatically correct. I'm getting the point across. And you need it, number one, in ethnic newspapers that zero in on these people that read it. Whether it be whatever ethnicity it may be, and the other thing is, like I said, do that short abbreviated, right straight to the point. This is what we are. This is what we can do for you. This is why we're important. And another item is that they should list all the things that the Obama administration and the Obama presidency per se have loused up, have ruined, have done damage to, going all the way back to whether it was companies that he had poured billions into and then were doing great and went under, and make a list, keep a running list of it. Keep a running list of Benghazi or this or that. People have a tendency to forget about everything.
We're not forgetting that here. Overpass, we're forgetting it.
No, not there. But I'm saying this is the way I feel it should be publicized. Preemptive strike on anything that he says. Get right up there right after what he says and debunk all of his lies or bring out all of his lies and do the ethnic newspapers and keep a running list of all the things that he likes to sweep under the carpet, Fast and Furious or whatever the heck they call it, that gun running thing,
mm-hmm.
in Mexico.
Fast and Furious. Exactly.
But keep that right there. Keep that right in front. It's like put it right in everyone's nose, because people forget about these things. And his greatest asset is any other conflict or something that comes up, he makes that the main focal point, and his and the liberal media, which is not, they're softening up a little bit now, because they're seeing that he's really not. I mean, you know, how long can you make excuses for a person that's inept? So
yeah.
So softening up a little bit, but just I would just keep these things right up there. I would say, oh, okay, here, this is number 11 that he didn't do. He didn't go ahead and use drones and knock out ISIS when it was coming across the Syrian border, and we wouldn't have this problem. Let it be number 11 or number 15 or whatever it is, and show them you know, all these things. Let's not forget these things. And
all you have to do is Google that. All you have to do is Google that. You can find those lists. If people want to know what's been going on, it's out there. You can find those lists.
I think the operative word is if people want to know. I think,
yeah.
You know, it's almost,
yeah,
almost like,
good point.
You got to put it under their nose. It's almost like dog food. you got to put it under their nose sometimes. In order, you know, people are not going. They're not going to go, oh, by the way, let's see what Obama is up to now, or what he's failed at now. No, I think that got to take a proactive stance on something like that and bring it right to the people, because they do. They're out there and they're telling you lie after lie and how good and this, that, and the other thing is, and there's nothing to dispute it. There's no list of all the things that he loused up on or ruined or his administration did or whatever. The thing about Bush and so forth, if any time he blames Bush, I would say, by the way, the last 2 years of his presidency was a democratically held Congress, and he couldn't get certain things done. So let Mr. President Obama and his cronies back off of something like that, because it was the Democrats that were preventing this, that, and the other thing. So,
now,
you know, like I said,
you can use
their
own figures against them, too. Everything is available. You can use their own figures against them.
Absolutely. But you know what? Like I said, it's got to be like dog food. You got to put it right under the nose. They will not
let
go
me,
out.
Let me make one more comment, that because you said something earlier about how politicians need to just tell the truth, answer the questions, and you weren't hanging with us, you know, back when we were on Sammy Sanford's show and we were trying to get Newt the nomination.
Right.
And I was going all over. Well, I went to 3 different states to work for Newt's campaign, and I met a lot of people. When
right.
I went to Alabama, I met a guy from the Czech Republic. They had opened up a campaign. They had opened up a campaign headquarters in Mobile, Alabama. It was a last-minute thing. They weren't going to do it, and they decided to do it because they had the manpower. So they started calling around for us volunteers, and me and a lady from here, we went out there and we made phone calls, held signs, did whatever. And we went out to eat one night with the campaign committee night, and I found out that one of the people that were helping to organize, was a guy from Czech Republic.
Right.
He was getting ready to run for office in the Czech Republic, and he wanted to come over here and study what our politicians were doing so that he could use some of our strategies and techniques.
Right.
So I said, well, what made you decide to follow Newt's campaign? And he said, you know why? Because Newt answers his question with a yes or a no, and then he explains why it's yes or no. Every other candidate
mm-hmm.
goes around the bush, and you're never even sure after he's finished talking for the next 5 minutes, you're not even sure if he answered your question.
Yeah.
So this is what I like about Newt, and this is what politicians had better start doing. They better start doing some plain talk. And you'll notice that they have. A lot of politicians have started engaging in more plain talk. You look at some of the speeches on the Senate floor and the House floor. They're getting the message.
Well, hopefully they're the conservatives that are getting the message, as opposed to the liberals that are trying to talk plain talk, because they realize that's what works. I tell you something. As I said, I was manning the phones for Mitt Romney because he was our candidate after they did a job on Newt, unfortunately. So I just didn't want to see Obama get back in for the sake of the country, not for the sake of anything else, and not for any racial this, that, or the other thing. But so I'm manning the phones, and I see that when you call up, they said, okay, you call if you get a if there's no one home and you get an answer, you get an answering machine, press this button over here, and there's a canned pitch that comes in. And so forth. And I said to the person that was there, the supervisor, I said, can I ask you something? I said, wouldn't it be a lot better if when you got an answering machine, instead of some canned pitch that everyone knows is a canned pitch, canned recording, how about if you said, listen, I'm a regular person, a volunteer that's working for the Mitt Romney campaign, and I would really like to have your vote. He's working so hard, and I'm saying this. It's not a canned or pre-recorded thing. We're spending our time doing it because we're very passionate about it. So please come out and vote for him, or at least look at what he has to say. Thank you very much. So a personal thing like that. I said people will listen to that, as opposed to someone that's calling up and asking to shampoo your rugs. You can tell when you've got that sort of an automatic response thing.
You're absolutely correct. Correct. What was their answer to you when you suggested that?
Answer
yeah,
is,
I wanted to hear that.
This is the way that we do it. And, what you're saying, yeah, it sounds really good, but, let's just keep it like this and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued. Actually, what I did was I kept it open, and I said my little piece, very similar to what I just said. It was an impromptu thing, and it was straight from the heart because I felt that was the right thing to do. And it's amazing that, once again, it's the little guy like me that puts the little suggestion in the suggestion box, and at the end of the week, they take the suggestion box and they throw it in the garbage, and whatever suggestions are there, and they go on doing the same thing. So
that's a very good analogy, Barry, as to what's going on up there in Washington. That's why I'm kind of have a reputation for being an extremely conspiracy-minded person. I mean, I really think there's a lot of stuff behind this that we don't even know about. I think these people know exactly how they could get our country on the right track. They don't want to. Okay,
right.
That's my
mm-hmm.
problem. I think they don't want to. And because they don't want to, we're going to have to force them.
Well, yeah, like I said, that's why I'm saying cut down on the words, get it out there, put it in the ethnic papers. Just don't let them get away with stuff on TV or whatever it may be. Listen, let me just switch tracks for 1 second. I saw your number on Facebook, and I called it just before, obviously. But I'm sorry, mm-hmm. your name and what am I on? I'm on, I don't know if I'm on talk radio or I'm on a blog or, how would...
Well, it's kind of both. It's actually called Blog Talk Radio, That's the mode that you're on. It's an internet radio show, and the name of the radio show is Bard's Logic Political Talk.
It's what?
The name of the show is Bard's Logic Political Talk.
Bard, B-A-R-D?
Yep, B-A-R-D.
Yeah,
Logic,
Bard,
L-O-G-I-C.
Bard.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Political Talk.
Yep, yes, sir.
Barry, if you'll friend us on Facebook, you'll get the link every time, every Wednesday. His shows are normally on Wednesday nights. He reserves Friday nights for doing Newt shows that are all about Newt. We talk
okay.
about other
right.
things on Wednesday night.
Okay. Wednesday night, what time?
10 o'clock.
10 p.m. Eastern.
Okay, Wednesday night, 10 o'clock. And Newt is on Friday?
It's not every Friday, but I'm going to try to increase the frequency of the show. Of doing the Friday night show, but when I do on Newt Gingrich shows, it's going to be on Friday evening.
Okay. this is the number to reach you by. And
right, that's the show number. And you're also welcome to you're also welcome, as she said, to look us up on Facebook. And also there is a page on Facebook. So just go to the search engine and just type in Bard's Logic Political Talk, and you like the page. There's also a group, which is the Bard's Logic Political Talk group on Facebook. Just ask to join. And then also here on Blog Talk Radio, when you find it on Blog Talk Radio, there's a way for you to follow the show, and then every time there's a show, it will send you an email. So follow the show as well as also follow us on Facebook with the group, and then like the page on Facebook as well. And then you also, do you have Twitter?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. And then also, I can be found on Twitter as this Robert Jeter, J-E-T-T-E-R, Jr.
Robert, R-O-B-E-R-T, Jeter?
Yes, J-E-T-T-E-R, Junior.
Mm-hmm. Junior, okay. And that's on Twitter?
Yeah, that's my Twitter handle, yes.
Okay. I hope I didn't overstay my welcome, but, you know, I'm very passionate about this. You know, I thank you very, very much for the opportunity for me to vent and to put some ideas out there.
Certainly, and you're very welcome to call in to any show any night. And that's how we kind of do things here on Bard's Logic, is usually on Wednesday. Here's kind of the format, and we, you know, begin at 10 p.m., and either between a half hour, hour, I will interview our guests for the evening, if we have guests, as we usually do, and then we have our panelists, where they ask questions, make comments to the host as well, and then if any time during the show, after I do the first set of interview questions, if an audience member wants to call in and ask the guest a question, they're welcome to do so, and then what we do is we enter what we call our roundtable discussion period, and where I try to go around as equally as possible.
Yeah.
With everyone who's on the line and try to, let them get their say. And so, unlike a lot of the other talk shows where you talk for 10 minutes and they're like, oh, well, thank you for coming in, goodbye, and let you go, you're welcome to stay on for the remainder of the show, as you did tonight.
I think that your show is absolutely, absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
I really, really do. I thank you so, so much for giving me the opportunity. I hope it goes somewhere into some suggestion box somewhere. But,
there you go. Yeah, think of us as your suggestion box. Well, we And the reason why I'm talking quickly is we unfortunately may have about 10 minutes before I have to start shutting down the show. But,
right.
Yeah, the theme, kind of the brand of the show is Bart's Logic is the grassroots We the People show. It's about you, Barry. This show is about you. It's about the grassroots. It's about the people. And we very much welcome folks like yourself to come onto the show. And, yes, use this as your suggestion box where you can vent, as you said, and get out your ideas.
Well, I'd love to see this. Some of the ideas thought about and you know implemented. And I would feel real good about it. Not from an ego point of view, but from a point of view of taking care of our country and getting our country back. Not even back on track,
definitely.
Just getting it back. Bart, I thank you very much. And the young lady that I spoke to before.
We're glad you came on.
Well,
you can't really overstay your welcome because the show just cuts off automatically when it ends.
Yeah, that's true. There's times I have to interrupt folks, which you'll learn quickly. I don't like to do. I don't like to interrupt folks, but unfortunately there are times throughout the show where I have to kind of butt in and interrupt folks, either because we're running out of time or I need to bring it over to someone else to let someone else get some words in. But also, last thing I'll tell you, because I know everyone's got to go here, is that if you have someone you'd like to see on the show, whether it's a grassroots candidate or someone you know who is a grassroots activist or something of that nature, and you'd like to have them on the show as our guest, just let me know. Send me a message on Facebook. And if there's a certain topic you'd like to have discussed, bring that on as well, or any articles you want to share, you're welcome to send that to me on Facebook and work on making a show for that.
That would be wonderful.
Do you have one last newt interview? One last newt clip to play for us?
Yeah, let's see if I got one more. And I'll do this one, Tim, with the 3-minute clip, and then we'll have to take some parting comments. And of course, this has got to be one of my favorites. This is about a book he wrote called The Contract with the Earth.
For it TV, the world is thinking.
Contract with the Earth is designed to start a new conversation on two very different fronts. It's designed, and Terry and I set out after years of conversation to do this quite deliberately. We both love animals. We both spent large parts of our career focused on animals. I wanted to be a zoo director when I was a child or a vertebrate paleontologist. My two favorite institutions were the Bronx Zoo and the American Museum of Natural History. And I really love the natural world. When I became a teacher in 1971, I taught in the Second Earth Day. And then I became the coordinator of environmental studies at West Georgia College. Both my daughters used to go with us. And we would take classes for a week down to the Okefenokee Swamp and just try to get them invested in how rich and extraordinary and complex the natural world is and how diverse it is and how fascinating it is. And so I come out of that background in general, and we worked with E.O. Wilson and others in trying to save the Endangered Species Act. I engaged in a number of other activities as the Republican whip. I helped pass the Air Pollution Act, the Clean Air Act of 1990, which created the first cap-and-trade program for sulfuric acid and to save the lakes in the Northeast. And I've been actively involved in a variety of other programs along that line. We wanted to have two conversations in one book. We wanted to say to conservatives, don't be so put off by proposals on the left that you decide to yell no. Because when you yell no, people don't just hear you yelling no about a proposal, they think you're yelling no about the environment. And the fact is that 95% of the American people believe we have an obligation to protect the legacy that God has given us. We literally just did a series of surveys at American Solutions. We did 6 national surveys. Out of about 180 questions, the highest support was on protecting the legacy that we've been given by our Creator. And it brings people together whether you're right or left.
Okay, and with that, folks, I'll have to take some parting comments from our folks we still have on the line, and we'll do you, Barry. Just want to take a couple minutes, about two, to make any closing comments, and then you, Cindy, and then I'll have to close things out.
Well, I first of all, like I said, I'd like to thank you very, very much for giving me this airtime, allowing me to express my feelings. And hopefully to utilize some of the concepts or ideas that I was thinking about. It's so important that we all stick together. We've got to be one cohesive group. We've got to find that common glue that brings us together. And we've got to also reach out for those that are of the centrists, liberal centrists, and bring them into the fold too. I think it's so important that everyone realize that conservatives are thinking about the best thing for our country, and where we are right now is not the best thing for our country. So I think that would be something really, really important to do and to embrace. And once again, like I said, I thank you very, very much for this opportunity, and it's a marvelous show. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Barry, for coming to the show. I'm looking forward to hearing you on again. And for us, if you just spread the word, just share the link, to the podcast, to everybody, you know, friends, family, people who share the same beliefs as you, or people you want to be able to hear our conversations as well and hear more about Newt Gingrich for those who may not be as aware of them. So, yeah, just if you could share the link, that'd be great, and we'd really appreciate that. And, of course, definitely call back in. We'd love to have you back on. So, Cindy, let's go ahead and bring it. Thank you. We'll bring it over to you, Cindy.
Well, thank you very much, Barry, for calling in, and because you're a new caller. We haven't heard you before. We always like to get new callers. But I was just my last comments were just going to be just I hear people all the time saying, yeah, Newt, he's brilliant, but we got to stop saying that. We've got to take our best and our brightest, and we've got to use them. And that means we're going to have to overlook some of Newt's baggage. Now, as a Christian, I'm not really all that into overlooking sin, okay, except when the situation arises that someone who has done something wrong has actually expressed sorrow for it and has repented from it. And he said himself in his own words that he asked God to forgive him, and I believe him, and he behaves like a man who has been changed on the inside. And so I feel in my heart that Newt can be trusted, and not just with our country, but I think he can be trusted with our hearts also. I don't think he'll let us down. And so it really bothers me when people, you know, try to hold that grudge against me. We need him. We really do need him. And the only way we're going to get him is to help him monetarily. So I don't know how it's going to go, but we'll see what happens. Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, both of you, and the listening audience.
Yeah, and it was great, and we look forward to seeing everyone again coming up this Wednesday at 10 p.m., September the 3rd. We're looking forward to everyone coming in. I also want to say congratulations to my alma mater high school, Elder High School. I believe that they won their first football game this evening of the season, so I'll double check that, but they're up like 26 points in the second quarter, so I'm pretty sure they did well. I'll have to check that. The game was delayed. But anyway, I'm going to have to say, well, we'll see you then, and everyone have a good night. And I will end tonight as I do every night of the show, and that is with a song from Aubrey Ashburn. It's called Leliana's Song, and you can hear more of Aubrey's music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. That's A-U-B-R-E-Y, Ashburn, A-S-H-B-U-R-N.com. And so good night, take care, and we'll see you then.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.